It's all about language today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Joe DuBois and J.R.R. Tolkien have something in common. They make up languages. We'll talk to one of them today on Scribble. Joe, you've been infected by J.R.R. Tolkien, is that it?
Yeah, definitely, ever since I was little.
Yeah, what, do you really make up languages?
I've made up one language, but I've got some characters for other languages. But the one language I've been working on for about 7 years, so
and you,
that one's
you,
a lot
and
more
And you are
involved.
A junior in high school?
Yeah.
Okay. When your mother told me about you a year ago as a possible candidate for Scribble and has been trying to get you to come on, and you know how mothers are, they usually exaggerate, but she did bring you in a while back to see if you really wanted to be on, and I must say that she under-exaggerated your abilities. Yeah. You brought in a portfolio that looked like an accordion, all stuffed with material. You have been one busy person, spending a lot of time, I guess, in study hall that when you should have been doing your social science, not doing your social science.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
But what is it that attracted you to the business of language?
Well, originally, I just made a language to go along with the book. I didn't really care much about languages, and it was more of a code in the beginning. I had it so every letter of the English language correlated with a different letter, and that didn't really work out well, because, like, vowels would correlate with consonants, and it wouldn't sound pretty. And then I got more into Tolkien, and I got more into appreciating his sort of languages and how every single thing that he wrote about and made up sort of had a root in his language, and I wanted to add that largeness of the world into my book, so I decided to get more into language making, and then it reminded me a lot of music and stuff, and of how the words can be so pretty and like match the sounds with the meanings of the words, and I just got really into watching movies about languages and stuff like that.
When you talk about the book, it's a book you're writing?
Yeah.
Okay. Science fiction?
Oh, yeah. It's a fantasy book. It's changed a lot. I've added a lot of characters to it. But I sort of started writing it because I read this book series, The Inheritance Cycle, and I got really into the dragons in it and stuff like that. So I wanted to make a book about dragons. And then that evolved into a book about a person who had a dragon. And then that evolved into a book about a person who had a dragon who had to save the world. And then that evolved into a bunch of other things. And now it's barely even about the dragon.
So you mentioned that you started out just doing code. What's the difference between a language and a code?
A language, I feel like it has to evolve from somewhere, and it can't be, well, I guess they can be based off of other things, but a code is, it's nothing without the original. You know, you can't have a code that doesn't translate into anything else in a different language, but a language itself is like, it's got its own sentence structure, it's got its own syntax and way of grammar, and it's just a lot more fun to do because you get to make up a lot more stuff.
So can you describe the process by, I mean, this is a very complicated process. You're not just inventing little words and making them mean this, right? I mean, you've given this some incredible thought. I'm just amazed. So how did you start?
Well, I actually remember because we were on a car trip on vacation, and I decided that I wanted to write a language. So I got out a piece of paper, and I got out some crayons,
Now, wait a minute. You just decided you wanted to start a language?
That's
the sort of thing?
I didn't realize how hard it would be.
I don't know why that never occurred to me when I was driving.
I mean, why not? You can do it. So.
Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry I interrupted you, but I just thoughts like that don't come to me, so I was surprised. So how did you proceed then?
I decided to do the code thing where every letter translated, and then I was like, okay, but that's pretty boring. So I wanted to make an alphabet that went all the characters went onto a tree, so they hung down like leaves, sort of, all the characters of the alphabet. And I need to do that for this language, because I got rid of that idea once I started making a bigger language. And then after that, I started editing it and trying to make words to use in my book, but the sounds could never actually be made with, like, a mouth, because they were, like, not actual sounds. And then I decided, and then I started reading Tolkien, and I wanted to get more into the kind of stuff that he did, and I watched some movies about languages, like Arrival is about the aliens. And then I found out that language is a lot more about the sounds correlating to the meaning versus just making sounds to have a meaning. So I got out this little yellow notebook one day, and I just started writing down sounds that, like, I remember I made the word ren, R-E-N, and that meant beginning, and then I turned it backwards and made it ner, and ner meant end. And from there, I made conjugations of some word that it was like to begin or to end. And it was all based off of that. And then from there, it was like spiraling into words that sounded like other words. And then taking them backwards, and then they meant the opposite thing. And then from there, it just kind of spiraled into becoming bigger words. And then I decided I didn't like how it all sounded. So I threw it away. I kept some of the pretty words, and then I don't know if I still have the notebook, but I never look at it anymore. And then I decided to do it on the computer, because that's a lot easier, and copy and paste. And then I found out what accents were on letters, and that helped a lot, because everything looked weird before. And then...
This is a heck of a process.
Yeah, it's a lot of just throwing stuff away, because I didn't really have... I didn't really look up how to make a language. I just kind of thought, oh, I'll figure it out. It can't be hard.
There you go. I don't know why it never occurred to me. Tweet, you've been wasting your time.
Yeah, all I did was draw airplanes fighting each other in my study halls. I should have been writing a language. Well, I think everybody who has any kind of a creative mind does get fascinated with languages.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff, but nobody that I've never met anybody that has gone quite as far as you have gone in really thinking about what you're doing and not just, you know, dribbling down different sounds and stuff. Before we go any further, why don't we hear some of your language? Can you give us a sample?
Would you like poetry or sentences?
Well, let's have a little of both.
Okay, so I've only got really boring sentences. Sorry about that. But I like to do bits of dialogue, stuff that people would actually say. You know, so I have, where did you put the wine and food? Our guests are here. And that's Seraph Rainsav Galan von Kabte, John Morel du Bork, Zego Wintim Pien Nurete.
Oh, I see.
Wow.
And, you know, it has happened to me that I would say a word and think, and I'd repeat the word and repeat it until it became an odd sound. I thought, how does that sound mean this word? And, you know, it's true. If you listen to the music of languages and the sound of the words you're saying and the little songs that you sing,
right,
when you put emphasis into sentences, yeah, it's quite musical. And but I never got beyond the curiosity of the sound of words. You have branched into dangerous territory, young lady. Do you have a poem in a language?
Yeah, so this poem I decided to write because I didn't have any poems in my language. Because a lot of the times I write poetry because I like to use weird words, and I don't have a lot of weird words in the language. It's not super, super evolved like that. So do you want the English translation, or should I just...
Well, give us the English translation, and then let's have it in your language.
Okay. So this one, I just took words that I thought sounded cool in Fon Kisla, and then I decided to make them into a poem together.
Okay.
So it's to steal the stars. To steal the ethereal stars high in the sky, every color twinkling, a brief gift before they darken. The frost becomes dew, crickets stop their songs, the blue night stolen by the golden day. Manipulating stars to collect in leisure, silver reflections in a lake, to steal the grand stars.
Wow. That by itself.
You don't have to turn that into a language. No, that's already.
That is beautiful.
That is. Read it again.
In English?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. To steal the stars, to steal the ethereal stars high in the sky, every color twinkling, a brief gift before they darken. The frost becomes dew, crickets stop their songs, the blue night stolen by the golden day, manipulating stars to collect in leisure, silver reflections in a lake, to steal the grand stars.
See, a brief gift before darkening is a great line.
That is.
Now, in translation.
Yeah, now in your own language.
What's the name of this language?
Fon Kisla.
Okay. I beg your pardon.
Fon Kisla.
Fon Kisla, okay. I've never spoken Fon Kisla, but why don't you read that poem in Fon Kisla for us?
And it's got some weird sounds like clicks and stuff like that.
That's okay. I talked to Marian Makiba, who I can't do those clicks, those glottal stops that she used. But, however you have to do it, Fon Kisla is a demanding language.
I wanted to make it as fun as possible for your mouth to say. So.
Okay.
Maiklar dran evarim. Maiklar dran seste avarim. Baso ether dran pace. Fivin gega. Thro afros tuparo nor neter, jan lero erte ilo, imfeorien ris sigurim qui, jan eriavar, Michael par dran tandoruf, slahiste avarim, tenjni, salicor verium ether thro tubilo, Michaelar dran orium evarim.
I don't know what to say. It's bad enough that you can write great poetry like that, but then that you can create a language to write it in. That is amazing, Joe.
So, and this is still a work in progress?
Oh, yeah. I don't have a lot of... I've only got 40 pages of words right now.
So are you adding new vocabulary and things like that? Or
yeah. A lot of the times I'll be in the shower or something, and a little sound will come into my head, and I'll write it down like... What's one that I really liked? It's the word I made for excited. Oubletouvron. I liked that. It sounded a little French, and it sounded bubbly and happy. So I wrote that down somewhere. And then I have all these definitions of words that we don't have in English. And then I've got a ton of words that I've made up. And sometimes I'll just go onto the document, and I'll just add words where they sound like they might correspond.
I don't know. I don't know what to say. This is I've never talked to a language constructor before. It's what a fascinating way to occupy your mind and spend your time.
What are the aliens like who speak this language?
Well, so I'd have to start with a little bit of history because, so there's this thing that happens, and no one knows how many times it's happened in the universe, because what happens is everyone forgets everything that they know, and no one knows why, and no one remembers anything. So there's all this architecture everywhere in the world that people don't understand, and all these languages that people don't know what they mean. So, there are these creatures called Cadrangels. My brother actually gave me the name. I made them when I was, like, 12. And they're cat dragon angels. So they're these tall. I've changed what they looked like a lot. They're these tall, fluffy cat-like things with wings, and they're soft and fluffy to stay warm because they live really high up in mountains. And I wanted to make a language that sort of was a lot in the mouth and not much in the throat, because I feel like those creatures have lots of teeth and they could have a lot of very sharp sounds and stuff like that in their mouth. And so they based it off of all the languages that they found everywhere in the world, and they gave their own meaning to characters that already existed. So the characters end up looking, some of them look like nature things, some of them, when they're added together, they look like cityscapes. So it's kind of like the language I made is like a combination of languages that these creatures made.
When you make your language, do you create your own alphabet?
Yeah, I've got an alphabet. It's really, it's like 2 pages long, though.
It's too bad you can't see it. Well, she can show it to you after we're through recording this, but because it doesn't look like English. They're not English letters.
Yeah. I don't know about you, Joe. Where are you going with this?
I don't know. It's just fun.
Well, that's great. Because, you know, fun is what you ought to have when you're occupying yourself. But to have fun in such a potentially complicating way is fascinating. Where do you think you're going to go? I mean, when you get out of high school, what are you going to do in college?
Oh, I've always wanted to be an author since I was really, really little. And then I was like, yeah, okay, but that'd be really hard to get a job. Like, you gotta write a book, and then you gotta wait around until it gets picked up. And
it turns out, you know, after your mother said you wrote languages, I did a little research, and it turns out there are several large firms in and around Los Angeles and Hollywood whose sole job is to invent languages for science fiction and fantasy movies.
Yeah, that's been my dream job.
There are good jobs available doing exactly what Joe has done. I mean, it's...
There you go.
Yeah.
You wind up in Hollywood.
It's my dream job to make languages for, like, the kind of video games I play. Sometimes they'll make up languages for certain species, so I'll try to learn those languages for fun. And I just thought that'd be such a cool thing to do, to get paid to make a language based on certain creatures and stuff. Because it'd be a lot easier to make up a language if someone else had already made the creatures and their culture. You know, because then you get the sounds in your head of what kind of things. You get the words that they might use a lot, and like maybe they'd have more words. Like in Alaska, they've got more words for snow than we do, sort of thing.
So has inventing this language made you a better student of English?
Oh, yeah, I love English classes now. Before they were boring, but now I love learning about like syntax and grammar.
So you think you use English better because of this alternative language?
I think so. I actually learned more about English and French class than I ever did in English.
Right.
Because you're going through, I didn't know what conjugation was until French class. I'd been using it without knowing. So French class really helped me start to write the language, because I kind of started writing it as if it was just English, like a language I had just known. And I didn't understand what conjugation was. So I would just be like, I am and you are would be completely different words, because I didn't realize that they were like within the same conjugation. So I started taking French class, and that kind of starts teaching you not only a language, but how it works and how to create one. So in French class, like, I'd go home and I'd write some stuff down that might like help me with creating my language.
Do you have another one of your own poems?
I don't have...
I'm not content with just one.
I don't have any more info on Kiesla. I don't...
No, I want to in Joel.
No.
Yeah, we, you know, English is, we understand that sort of. So if you have another poem, I'd love to hear it.
Okay, so this one is, it's more like a legend or a song that was made about, so there's this desert called Tunin, or it's a country, I don't remember, but at least it would be a country, like a desert country. And it's just completely desolate sand with a few little cities popping up. It's sort of like Dune. And then in it, I added some religious things from Nakwilvisor, the religion in my book, because I like it when people add in, like, the names of Greek gods when they're talking about stuff in romantic poetry. It just makes the poem seem bigger. And then at the end, I added a word in Fon Kisla that doesn't quite have, like, a translation in English perfectly. So it's about a man. I don't know who he is. Maybe he was just made up when the song was made up in my world. I don't know. But his name is Ekalon, and his nickname is Ekalon El Ekloni. And I made this up in, like, the shower one day because I couldn't stop thinking about it.
Okay. So, a watery sound.
Yeah. So, a wounded man, forgotten, lost, upon the sand of Tunin, lain to die between the dunes. And so sand-blind Ekalon, Ekalon El Ekloni, he sang his pain into the air, fingertips dark iron sank deep into his skull. Ekalon El Ekloni, rock scrapes lines into his skin, rivulets of ruby, penlax sand below his feet. And so sand Hanab Ekalon, Ekalon El Ekloni, dust sings pain into the air, ancient sorrows winged, no longer is he imprisoned.
Where does this come from?
It's...
I don't know what to say. That's just amazing, Joe.
You have
a very interesting mind. And it's... I could listen to this for quite a while. you're writing all this in a big book?
Yeah, it's not so much a book. It's been a finger quotes book for like 5 years because I keep... Well, first off, it was just a world, and I made the world because I always liked the idea of just, you know, living in a fantasy world. And you go and you got your sword and you got your bag and you got a dragon and maybe like a D&D party adventuring group, and you just go on adventures. So that was originally, I just made it so I wouldn't be bored in my head and I could draw pictures of these characters. And then I decided to make, like, the world a bigger deal. And then I decided, hey, I should probably actually, like, make this a book, and maybe I should give it, like, an actual plot line. And I've been working on the plot line for a few years, and it's coming together slowly. But I've got about 50 pages of short writings that I kind of make the plot line fit with, and I don't actually have the book written yet. It's a joke that all my friends make fun of me for, because I've got this huge book, but I don't actually have a book.
That sounds like as good a way to write a book as any. There was a fellow I didn't know him personally. I knew of him, and we had mutual friends, but he made his way by getting grants to write short stories. And after he'd gotten all these grants for all these short stories, he got another grant to make a novel, so he just put the short stories together. And he knew how to work the grant system. But you do this just for your own amusement.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now I can't kind of stop doing it. Like, I'm thinking about these characters all the time. If something happens to me, like this winter... In December, maybe, I was on a walk puppy sitting this dog that I puppy sit, and we rounded a corner, and there was this road ahead of us that sort of curved, and there were all of these trees with, like, red leaves, and it just seemed like the shadows were pulling into it, and it just got darker and more curved as you went along. And then I looked more closely at it, and it was just kind of a road with some trees. But I added that into the book, because I thought it was cool. So I'm just always thinking about it.
Roll? I mean...
We're way behind, Don.
Yeah, I guess we are. Imagine having a student like this in class. Wouldn't that be fun?
You would be a better teacher.
You'd be a better teacher. You bet your life you would be. It would. That would just be great. But this kind of creativity is to be encouraged. Of course, how do you do in your other classes?
I do pretty good. They're pretty easy. Yeah. I usually don't like science classes, but I'm taking chemistry, and that's pretty fun. But that's the only kind of class I don't really like that much.
Uh-huh. I didn't like chemistry very much either, Joe, so I sympathize with you. But I did love biology. The Science of Life, I thought, was just terrific.
It's so poetic.
What?
It's so poetic, too, like learning about it. I don't know. I liked the class.
Yeah. But I imagine you don't have any trouble in English class.
No. I'm sad. I haven't been able to take any English classes yet this year, and I'm really sad. I miss it.
Do you do much reading? I know you've read Tolkien, but have you read many other authors in different genres?
Yeah, I'm usually working on two books at a time, one poetry book and then one other book. I read a lot of, I like Stephen King.
Oh.
So some horror books, but I also like his short stories that are more of like a feeling than horror. And then Ray Bradbury, too. Harlan Ellison, just weird books. I like a lot of poetry. The older I get, the more I like poetry.
What poetry specifically?
Robert Frost, I really, really love a lot. I've got a big book of his, and I performed one of the poems in speech class when we had to perform something. And then I made a list so I'd remember. I liked Frank Herbert. I liked Dune a lot. Ray Bradbury was good. Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, the guy that wrote Le Petit Prince.
Little Prince?
Oh, yeah, The Little Prince, right.
And I like a lot of sort of children's books, too, because they always have really, really weird plots.
Right.
Yeah, this is a very interesting thing. To hear you go through that list, you incline much to science fiction, don't you?
I love science fiction. It's just the weirdest stuff.
How do you mix Tolkien in with science fiction? That is a quasi or pretend historical thing. It's true, it's got magic and stuff in it, but would you count that as science fiction?
I don't really know. I don't really think about genres when I read a book. I just read it for if I like it or not. I don't think much about the genres. I'll just pick up a book if it's got a cool cover, and then I'll read it.
Have you read a lot of C.S. Lewis at all?
Oh, not. I want to, but I haven't read very much of him.
The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, that's more for children. But he wrote a trilogy of science fiction books that are really good. Out of the Silent Planet.
Yeah, you told me about that one.
And
Perelandra, Out of the Silent Planet.
And that
the
hideous
city of
strength.
Yeah.
Where King Arthur comes back from the dead.
That's, that's good stuff. That really is. And
well, we need to give her something more to do. She
has
a lot of time on her hands.
I tell you, a great book that combines science fiction with what you might call morality or religion is The Great Divorce. It's a very thin book, but
C.S.
a memorable
Lewis,
one. It is really an extraordinary book. I remember reading that, and it just lit me up like a candle. It was terrific. But sometimes the book will do that. It'll just get you going. But you don't need books. You write your own.
Oh, I need books.
You need
books? Yeah.
Do you get ideas from books, or do you make them? You have your own ideas?
Most of the time I have my own ideas, but sometimes when I'm reading a book, I'll like a certain feeling the book gives me, or maybe just a line of it. Or yeah, I like reading books a lot. It's nice to see how other people, because writing is more than just putting words on a page that mean things. It's like, I like the way that the sentences flow sometimes and the sentence structure that they use.
Yeah.
So sometimes I'll adopt stuff like that.
We could learn a lot more from Joe DuBois, but we're running out of time. Thank you very much, Joe, for being with us today.
Thank you.
And that'll do it for now. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. We'll join us again next week for the next session of Scribble.